Hey, welcome to Homeroom. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. We are out of the spooky month. It is after the weekend of spookiness.
Yeah.
And, you know, we are in my favorite month of the year, Jacob, November, also known as Movember, if you're supporting, you know, fundraising efforts to help, you know, mental health and, you know, support for, you know, cancer experienced by men. It's a men's month. It's Movember, rocking the mustache, Jacob.
No shave.
Start this. Yep. No shave November.
Yeah.
But you know, Jacob, lots of things happen. I want to hear about your weekend a bit, catch up on Homeroom. What's popping in Jacob's world? How was your weekend, bud?
My weekend was good, Johnny. You know, there were some concerns that we might end up having to come in on Friday, Halloween, to record some stuff. But thankfully, that didn't end up happening. And we both had really good Halloween days. And you know, I was excited about that. It's always good. I've still got two young brothers. One is a freshman in high school. The other is a first year in middle school. So I think as long as you still have some young kids around, Halloween is a lot of fun.
I agree, man. We were trick-or-treating. It's always the time to get outside and you know, have conversations with the neighbors. The weather was great, you know, fun to see all the costumes, fun to see all the generous gifting of candy, all the treats. And you know, I got pockets full of Kit Kats and almond joys. Jacob, before we dive into the week though, especially when we're talking about treats, as some really devastating cuts hit communities this weekend, you know, let's put the rest, what's your favorite Halloween treat?
That's hard. Cause I get excited for the bad ones, like the, you know, candy corn and stuff. I mean, that's no good, Johnny. You do not want to live your life as a candy corn guy, but
I max out on candy corn. It starts off being this treat that I crave, that I'm like, I need a giant bag of candy corn. And, you know, I pour it in a dish and it's decorative and it's great. And, you know, handful after handful, it starts to fade away as, you know, less and less my favorite treat.
Well, corn is best enjoyed when it's been an entire year since you've had any candy corn. Once it's been, I just had a handful of this stuff. Oh, yeah, it's not very good. Okay, yeah, I'll wait till next year. That'll be good.
Exactly. And it's always fun to have, you know, those small size candy bars and all the assortments and remember, I forgot. I haven't had an Almond Joy in a long time. I haven't, you know, had a Kit Kat. So with pockets loaded up with treats this week, I started, you know, teaching and, you know, we were looking at things, Jacob, and, you know, it's bittersweet. I'll keep the puns and play and word plays going related to treats. But this is actually pretty serious, especially related to food and especially related to food, health, learning, and young people in our community. But, you know, we start this month and we start this week, you know, with the impacts of government shutdown. And I'll get to that in a minute because I know there's a lot of far-reaching implications of, you know, the failure to be able to resolve things and to have this shutdown going as long as it's going. I almost wonder and float the idea of things that start to get canceled as we come back. It's one of those ways of like, well, we brought this back, but we couldn't fully bring it back. And I guess that's some of my pessimism with government right now. And both sides of the aisles, although I'm not pointing fingers and, you know, and blaming those radical Democrats that seem to be the cause for this government shutdown. See, Jacob, I did some sarcasm, so Tim will be proud. Hey, where is Tim? Listeners might be wondering, well, you know, Tim is not with us for this Homeroom. He is tardy. He has got an unexcused absence, but we decided to go forward with things just to see. He might pop up at any moment. You never know. But he's also an administrator now, so his Monday mornings might look a little different than ours, Jacob. You know, I get to stroll out of class and hop on here with you, and we can kind of cover things. But you know, Tim might be in a meeting. Tim might be, who knows? He might be just, you know, going through hordes of candy from his trick-or-treating on Friday. But folks, no, seriously, what Jacob and I were kind of talking about for homeroom today is, you know, the impact of these cuts and of the government shutdown, but more specifically around, you know, the bracing ourselves for the effects of SNAP benefit lapse, right? Which is really kind of my worry, is not only is this going to have a big impact, the lapse in SNAP benefits due to the government shutdown, but also, Jacob, I say that with that pessimism I shared just a moment ago. I worry because this is already such an underfunded and important thing, and I'll get to defining it for listeners. Like, hey, what is he talking about? He's going from candy bars to SNAP. SNAP's not a kind of treat, but SNAP is an acronym that stands for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and it's the largest federal assistance program in our country. And a lot of listeners like myself, you may formally understand this growing up or know it more commonly as a food stamps program or a food assistance program, right? And it's, you know, there's an algorithm for how to qualify for these benefits. But Jacob, by and large, this is a stopgap and, you know, supposed to be a safety net, although it's barely that for most families and communities who truly need it. It is a way of making sure that children do not go hungry, right? And one of the things we know is that of the people who receive SNAP, 39% of those people in our country are children. So you got to imagine that, you know, a sizable amount of those receiving SNAP are children. That's Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP. You know, that's food assistance, nutrition assistance. That's access to food, generally by an amount of money allocated to an EBT card. You may have seen that at your grocery store if you're not familiar. Or you're like me and have been, you know, part of communities. And in my growing up, you know, it was essential food stamps, a food assistance program, you know, to help, you know, raise the it was a like idea of all boats come rise up in a rising tide.
Yeah.
Right. And so the idea that if, you know, families don't make enough money to have, you know, livable wages applied towards nutrition, especially for children, that there is government assistance programs that help, you know, offset that cost of food, right? Or in some cases, provide food, and especially for children. 39% as of Friday when I pulled some information, Jacob, 39% across our country of the recipients of this assistance program are children. But Jacob, also for our listeners more locally, you texted me a pretty poignant statistic that, you know, share this one, because if 39% of the nation's children are impacted this with this, what about locally?
Yeah, Johnny, right here in Wisconsin specifically, I found a report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum that said that as of 2024, Milwaukee County found that 45% of households on SNAP benefits had children under 18. So that's pretty much, if your household, about half of them are going to have young kids living in that house that are receiving these benefits.
Yeah, yeah. And how does this impact schools, right? Here we are, educated educators talking education. And we've made the argument many a times that if you're hungry, if you experience malnutrition, right, that it's nearly impossible. I mean, it's pretty much proven to be impossible to be your best learner. In fact, it's really hard to be any kind of a learner if we're undernourished, if we don't have good nutrition. And knowing this, having insurmountable, like piles and piles of, you know, research, scientific consensus, one of my favorite concepts, Jacob, listeners may be like, oh, here he goes again. There's going to be a digression into scientific consensus. I won't go there. You can go to previous shows, or I'm sure it will come up again soon where I will go at length to define it. But in other words, there is consensus on the research that nutrition is absolutely paramount to learning. And given such, you know, rather than figure out, well, who needs nutrition? Who doesn't need nutrition? who's getting it at home, who's not getting it at home. You know, many schools across this country, including districts in Wisconsin and in the entire state, have proposed just universal food programs for all students. Okay. Well, that isn't necessarily part of the budget right now and being implemented very well. So we still have hungry kids in classrooms, and we are bracing ourselves. Jacob, this is that bad news I hate to report on a Monday, for the, you know, the ceasing of SNAP benefits, a lapse likely to happen. I know I'm worried. I'm very rarely the sky is falling on issues, but I'm quite concerned, Jacob, not about just the impact of the lapse, but my worry is that as we come back to things, do we say, well, you made it through the lapse. Yeah. You know, we're coming back with significantly reduced food assistance programs in this country. And just returning to some of the points about how nutrition is absolutely essential to the development of the young people in our community. And it's not even adjacent. It's right there with it. Our schools, right? The social responsibility we have to prepare young people for not only the next grade, but for being citizens in our communities, for being productive workers, for being, you know, just all around great citizens in a democracy, AKA, you know, working towards a strong democracy. Nutrition is one of those investments that's absolutely no brainer. The more healthy, the healthier we are, especially at our early, in our early years, the better learners we are, the more likely we are to be successful in school, the less likely we are to be, you know, kind of pushed into, and I'll say it that, when you deny young people nutrition and access to a good education, you are pushing them into the prison systems where it's way more expensive, you know, to feed, educate, house, and take care of. And I'm not even getting into my personal stance on this, you know, the atrocity that I think is how many young people are pushed towards this life. If you're just a fiscally responsible listener up there, you know, it is a drop in the bucket to feed children, especially to feed children in school. Think about how long kids are in school all week long. You kind of bypass the whole. And again, I'm not representing my argument. My argument is like, I don't care where they're eating. I want the assistance to be in families and in schools. I think it comes down to feeding hungry young people. It's a no-brainer. Make sure they have good, nutritious food so that they can grow. We have all the evidence we need that this is absolutely essential to the strength of our country and our future.
And part of the problem there, Johnny, is that when you gut the SNAP benefits program, that adds stress to your state program or to your local program or to the teacher who has to buy food to bring in for kids, because teachers aren't going to let this happen. You know, they'll do whatever they can to help the kids. It adds stress all the way down the level from the federal down to the individual. And these are already people who are struggling to do these things.
Absolutely. I mean, Jacob, you hit the nail on the head. So that's where I worry when we have these wonderful folks working, whether it's a local organization or it's a school food pantry, right? Or it's teachers who just know, oh, my students need to eat.
Yeah.
And not all of them have access to food on any given day. And so, you know, they go out of their way, already underpaid and overworked, to make sure they have snack cupboards, you know, healthy, nutritious things that help children in their classroom be good learners. Well, you know, Jacob, you know, what does this do, right? To, like, why are we talking about this related to education? Well, there's a direct impact of malnutrition on student learning. To be really specific about it, to nerd out for a second, right? Educators talking education. Listeners, you like this kind of stuff. That's why you tune in. Not only is malnutrition have a direct link to a direct impact on student learning, we're talking about cognitive and academic performance. In other words, let me break it down. It's difficult to concentrate when you're hungry. I mean, everybody listening can relate. Hungry children struggle to focus in classrooms, and this leads to decreased ability to absorb and retain information. Kind of makes sense, right? If you can't concentrate because you're hungry, it's not a choice at that point. We can't say like, hey, look at me, pay attention, right? There's a difficulty to concentrate. Well, you know, here at Busted Pencils, we hammer away at how much do we value test scores, like especially big standardized tests and putting too much emphasis on testing. But in a world that does prioritize, it's like you can't have your cake and eat it too. For people who are advocating, you know, these programs aren't necessary, or do we really need to make sure, is it the school's responsibility for children to be fed? Is it, a government's responsibility to provide food assistance out of one side of their mouth? The other side, we need to make sure there are high test scores. Well, guess what? Studies consistently show that food insecure students perform worse on standardized tests and academic assessments. So if you want students to do better, fund the low-cost, high-impact programs like SNAP, like food assistance, and all kinds of community programs that come together to make sure children who might not have access, likely don't, by all indicators, have access to healthy, nutritious food, get some, right? So we know concentrating is difficulty, test scores are likely to be lower. Studies consistently show that. So we could say, we could predict they will be lower. You know, we can even go into, you know, pediatricians who have reported on that malnutrition directly impacts brain development and cognitive processing abilities. So we're looking at a small ask to do a lot of long-term good, not even out of altruism, where for me, it's a simple, do you care about kids? Sure. Well, then you care about getting them food. That should be a no-brainer. But we could get into the weeds and say, you know, brain scientists have given us all we need to know. There's reduced cognitive function, and malnutrition directly impacts brain development, as well as contributes to memory problems. All this is school stuff, Jacob. It's like, I don't even need to keep going to build a pretty convincing case, right, to the jury out there, you the people, that this is just unbelievably terrible for our communities, but especially terrible for the most in need. Tim would say to the most vulnerable, though I'm really working on not seeing children as necessarily vulnerable. They are, right? It's not like I could say to a kid, maybe a third grader, like, you know what? You need to get a higher paying job and you need to get out there and you need to go grocery shopping and do a better job getting your food, right? I could blame parents all day. That's not going to work as a good teacher. That doesn't solve the problem that, you know, this young person who is vulnerable at their age doesn't have access to healthy, nutritious food. And we could say, my counterpart might say, well, that's their parents' responsibility. And I say directly back to my counterpart, well, guess whose responsibility it becomes? No matter who we decide's responsibility is today, it's quickly becoming all of our responsibility, fiscally, socially, in all kinds of ways. If we want to lessen the load, it's simple, folks. We feed kids. And I know this is amidst a government shutdown with all kinds of other ways that is putting our communities into crisis. Just my worry, Jacob, coming back full circle around to this, my worry is that with the cuts, we come back with even less. And an already, what I'll say is a shoestring program for a slam dunk investment in young people. In other words, this to me is more attacks on the working class, more attacks on families experiencing poverty, and that number is increasing by the day in this country, especially with the shutdown. So I know I went on a soapbox about this, but it's like, come on, when it boils down to it, let's call it what it is, cruelty to children, right? And a direct impedance on success in our schools. And so we're bracing ourselves. This weekend, we braced ourselves. November 1st hits, the lapse begins, and hopefully it's a short one. I mean, that's for many issues. Listeners out there, you're like me, following the clock, watching Every day I pull up the website to see the running clock of the government shut down and to read about its far-reaching impacts and possible pathways out of it, because it is never good when democracy is in the ICU. And with the government shutdown, Jacob, I'll pile on the metaphors. We're in a coma. Democracy in a coma.
Yeah.
So I mean, these are tough times. Listeners, stay hopeful, right?
I think stay there is active. Room for hope, Johnny. Because like okay. You said, I mean, the program was a shoestring thing. I've got the numbers here. It's $190 per person on average, just $356 for the entire family on average here in the United States on that program. That, think about that. That's less than $100 a week for your groceries coming through this program. So maybe, how about this, Johnny? Instead of we come out of this weaker, we come out of this saying, and when we bring it back, it's got to be better.
Well, boom, that would be unbelievable, Jacob.
That's my message to you, Mr. Luminacci.
I'm messaging that out into the universe to say, hey, if there's anywhere, and there's a couple other areas too, but if there's anywhere as an educator, as an educated educator, you know, as a teacher, you know, just as a parent and a community member, like, let's invest in a high return area. And that's feeding people who need to be fed. It just should be a baseline. Like, if you're young, and like, I believe it at all ages, but I can live with the fact that people disagree with that, but we should find common agreement around children. Young people ought to have healthy, nutritious food and a good education. And those two need to be there to support one another, because without that nutrition, right, the education piece is doomed. So public schools, we depend on these programs for students to be them their best selves. Families increasingly depend on these programs. And I think they're really important. There's no shame in participating in these programs. And that's the other piece too, is it's been stigmatized. It's been, you know, talked ill about and blame placed on families. Jacob, when you just shared the amounts, right, it's like debunking the myth. Come on, folks. We're just giving a little to hopefully go a longer ways. And it's not easy. It's not like we're talking about, hey, here's just free groceries for everybody who needs it, right? It's really talking about, you know, a pittance of assistance that families depend on. Increasingly, we know 39% of our country and 45% of households locally to the studio Jacob sitting in right now truly depend on this. So, we started the show off with some jokes and some light conversation around treats, which are wants, not needs. But we need food. We need water. We need shelter. We need space. We need a good education system. We need hope. Jacob reminds us there's always space for hope, right? And we also need each other. So, Jacob, man, I'm glad to be here with you today. Listeners, we appreciate you being here with us. It's the beginning of the week, beginning of the month. I'm going with hope now. Jacob, you turned my pessimism back to my optimism, my optimistic self.
There we go.
And I'm excited for November, Jacob. And now it's time for your moment of zen. If those in charge of our society, politicians, corporate executives, and owners of press and television can dominate our ideas, they will be secure in their power. They will not need soldiers patrolling the streets. We will control ourselves. Hey, Pencil Busters. Thanks for listening to Busted Pencil's Homeroom today. Welcome to November. And remember to grab other great podcasts filled with more Busted Pencil's content on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website. And remember to grab this week's class in session on Wednesday. And you can find Producer's Choice on Friday. And of course, catch the Busted Pencil's broadcast on Saturday at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for 1 hour of your favorite Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.